Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I'm joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team, and this week is no exception. I have the wonderful and delightful Sarah Sloman. Hello, Sarah.
Well, what a pleasure to join you, John. Everyone else is on holiday, so you got stuck with me.
Now, this is a very, very rare occurrence because I have a past Woman of the Year in Sarah Sloman, and I have the current Woman of the Year, ladies and gentlemen, Jackie Barker, OEM Strategy Director for Keyloop. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolute joy to have two Women of the Year. Sarah, you had a massive year, didn't you, as Woman of the Year? It was quite transformational for you.
Yeah, the thing about the award, and I'm so delighted for you, Jackie, even now, the waves that you're making with it behind you, is kind of just about raising awareness of inclusivity, diversity, but also achievement, right? These awards are given at a point in someone's career where they've got lots behind them, and how you then go forward with it is up to the winner to decide. So as we know, I sort of did a very collaborative, progressive thing and allocated the a bursary funding over to people who wanted to do mental health first aid courses or wanted to progress their careers, because I felt very supported at Paythrough, so I didn't have any of those elements to kind of proceed with. And one of the reasons why your application was so strong, I think, was because it's not just what you've done for your day job, it's how you spend your life, how you devote your time to others, how you are a mentor, how you are expanding globally. It's just such a deserving winner, and all of the other shortlisted candidates also are worthy of the notoriety that they got from being on stage with you, and not a dry eye in the house, your beaming face. It was just a fantastic, fantastic day. What did it mean to you, Woman of the Year 2024?
Thank you. I honestly didn't think I'd got it. And Sam said, you could tell by my face, I didn't think I'd got it. And I wouldn't actually be that presumptuous. I think there were some, like you said, there were some really brilliant women. And what I loved about it was it wasn't all the same age of women. It was a real kind of diverse mix. Some earlier in their career, some more established, and some quite new into automotive as well. So all doing really powerful things in the areas of the industry that they worked in. So I thought that was really remarkable. And then the kind of giveaway was obviously when my boss, Harvey, did that little speaky bit. That was clearly obvious, my boss. And what was that was lovely about that, when I joined Keyloop, I joined probably at a time that had been quite difficult personally for me. I'd left a job, I'd left one place because I just didn't necessarily feel like my face fitted there. But then I was approached by Keyloop to join their business and run a global team, which I would never, we talk about not applying for jobs that you wouldn't think you're ready for. I would never have applied for that job in a million years, actually. I thought, I've never worked in a DMS business before. Even though I'd kind of taken lots of different steps through digital, I started my career in media publishing and then went through Auto Trader, then into SaaS, and then into e-commerce, and then into Keyloop. So it's just been this continual learning journey for me, which I've really enjoyed. But I think Harvey saw something in me. I bumped into her at an event, and at the time when lots of people that I knew happened to walk by, and it was just, you know what it's like, Sarah, when we were at the EV, we were at Move 24, and it was like we either knew, between us, we knew loads of people, and it was such a lovely, oh hi. I think she thought, God, she knows everybody. And I said to her, great, welcome. She was American. Welcome to England. Who can I introduce you to? She's like, Pontus, connect me with Harvey, and we'll make sure that she finds people. That was the, like, you're new here, you're a woman, let's make sure that we help you land. And I think then she thought, I need to hire that woman. And so she did, which was brilliant. And then just said, go figure it out. Let me go figure it out. And I then, as part of my entry, I kind of inherited a team that one woman. And I left the team. I've now handed the team over that's 50-50 women. And I've intentionally made sure that we've brought women in from different bits of the industry who are brilliant. And then you can train, you recruit attitude, or you recruit the right attitude. You can train skill. Then you can always teach someone a DMS, or not that I know the details of a DMS, because clever technical people do that, but I kind of understand and have enough energy and passion around what tech can do in this industry and how it supports automation. So I think it's about playing to your strength, but also making sure that you see different strengths in others, because I know what I'm good at, but I also equally know what I'm not good at. Minutiae detail is not my thing. You know, Johnny is my thing. You know, I can do that, but I can't do the, you know, the tech detail of a statement of work. That would literally turn my blood cold. Lovely.
Amazing.
So I think that's that was something I was really, so what did it mean to me? I think, you know, when you know in your heart you're doing a good job and you just want, at some point you think to be recognised. So I think for me, that was the culmination of everything I'd ever done was recognised. And it was really lovely. I was overwhelmed, actually. And I'm still kind of thinking about, I've been reflecting a lot on all there about what to do with it. And I've kind of got ideas now, so.
Well, just before we go back to John, there is one lovely moment that happened where, well, for a start, as Lorna McAteer is another Woman of the Year will testify, it's extremely difficult to keep a lid on it. And I actually was invited by Sam Panalosi. So when you said Sam earlier, that's not Sam Clark from the EV Cafe, that's Sam from Cox Automotive, an absolute powerhouse woman that she is. Awesome. She suggested that I wrote your application and put it in, obviously anonymously and everything, which is how it all works. So it was all judged very fairly. And so, of course, I knew. And then there was this awful moment, John, where we realised that Jackie was due to do a sort of speech, a piece at the awards day. We're like, well, we can't get her to do that and then get look like teacher's pet favoritism. So Lorna and I had to kind of step in last minute, and even at that stage Jackie was so unaware and yet so willing to help and so kind of like, sure, bump me off the list, whatever. Here's all the work I've done.
Here's the content, off you go.
I know, and you put it in our safe hands. And if Paul Kirby was here, he would tell us off though, because we have brushed over at least two acronyms there. Paul is our EV Cafe acronym police to make sure that everybody understands what we're talking about. So we had DMS, which I presume is Digital Marketing Service.
No, right?
No, something else.
Dealer Management System. So Keyloop are the dealer management system for thousands of retailers. And actually, as we think about EV, that group of humans, I think, is probably what's the word I'm looking for? There's an opportunity to teach them more about EVs and how you, if they're the retailer, influencing a consumer decision, I don't think they're necessarily educated enough to help that decision. Because it's a total shift in how you sell a car. So that group and how we provide technology and put that information in the hands of retailers is probably the biggest shift we can make in educating and transformation around EVs. So that's an opportunity I think we've got.
Jackie, I've heard you described as a powerhouse on a number of occasions, and your career history shows that you're not stuck on a comfortable chair. You move around to different places and do different jobs. But Sarah alluded to there's a lot more to you than just the job you do. Can you give us a sense of the breadth of the activities that you get involved with as a person? Forget just being that global strategy director. Who is Jackie Barker?
Oh my God. And this is the bit where we all hate talking about ourselves, right? I could sell somebody else or I can sell a product, but when it comes to talking about ourselves, we're all a bit British about it. So I think some of the things I've always been supportive of women and actually making sure that you push women into the limelight and you shine that light on other people, not just women, actually. I've hired some great people at Keyloop and they are incredible. And it's like, it'd be brilliant, you know, go show you how you can do certain things. So I think I've always been quite curious to learn, but I really love, I've got three boys. So I'm a single mum to three boys. And I'm still good friends with my ex, actually. So that I co-parent three boys with him. But I also then guardian two other boys who are, they live in Hong Kong, but they come to school in the UK and then they come to me at the weekends when they have the long weekends because their parents live too far away. So I have like an extended family, and my partner also has three girls. One of these girls has a disability. So she's coming to me today, which is lovely. I've got a real passion for young people and how you help them. So I used to volunteer at their school when they were choristers. I was a matron at the weekends. Because, you know, I think if they're doing this chorister thing, I'm going to do the chorister thing. I'm not going to give, they can't give up their weekends, if I'm not. So if they were working Christmas, because, you know, choristers are quite busy at Christmas and Easter, I would volunteer to make during the Christmas or Easter so that you're in it with them. And I think that's quite important. But one of the lovely things I've been involved with this year is the thing called Empowering Auto in Canada. And they asked me to do a panel for them last year and to facilitate a panel. And this year they're asking me to do like MC their event. But also it's a group of young women that came out of their ERG and they've set up this incredible organization in Canada that helps to empower diversity in Canada. So how do you get women in tech or women in automotive? So I'm helping them try and take that concept into a more international space. So whenever I talk to women at OEMs in other markets, I'm like, there's this thing in Canada, I think it's really good and we should do that. And they're like, yeah, we definitely should do that. So I think it's how do we take something and then roll it out? To be honest, it's not that scientific. You just have conversations with people, not about your day job. I think if we're, I found this brilliant book on the way back from about 10 years ago, I went through a divorce and went to Thailand with the kids. And on the way back, I found this brilliant book and it sits on my desk. And it's called The Code of the Extraordinary Mind. And in that book, it looks at three things that you ask yourself. And it's, how do you want to learn? How do you want to grow? And how do you want to contribute? And none of those things are about money or status. It's all about how do you want to learn? How do you want to grow? How do you want to contribute? So I think learning for me is, if I want to learn something about an industry. So I worked for Vivendi for a few years. And then I was really curious about e-commerce. And we didn't do e-commerce. We did calcs, finance calcs. So I learned about that. And then I went to work for a company that was doing e-commerce because I just wanted to learn how that bit works. Like, how do you sell cars online? I don't know. I'll go and work with someone that does that and then learn. And I think that's how I've gone through my career. It's not about money or status. It's about I'm passionate about this thing and I want to get better at it because I want to help OEMs sell cars online. If that's what they need to do, how do we create the ability to do that and who does it well? And so I think that's probably, if you know what your core purpose is and it's to understand or educate or translate or, you know, be part of something bigger than yourself, that's probably what drives me. It's not just about doing a job or earning money. It's about, I want to do something that fires me up every day and that could be feeding like six kids dinner because I love that. That's joyful for me. Some people would go, but you know, I love that crazy, all the kids are home. You know, I love kind of the mum side of my life as well. So that's really, that's an important part of who I am, like that nurturing person.
Let's go back a little bit, Jackie, to what has caused you to be the way you are. Have you always been that person who gets stuff done, is all about people, drives forward to learn stuff and be curious? Or is that something you've learned as a result of parenting or friends? How have you become that person?
I think, you know, vulnerable overshare. My exam results were a bit rubbish, to be fair. You know, they were really awful. I did the walk of shame out of my grammar school because I just, you know, we were second year GCSEs and mine were a total shit show. So I think leaving grammar school, like honestly, and having three boys, you're like, sometimes you have to just get. So academically, I think I had, and I talked about that on the stage at the Women of the Year Award. I think I've always had that academic imposter syndrome. So I've probably been really driven to learn and feel really fluent in something before I talk about it. And I think probably that held me back, but it also really drove me forward to continually, don't let that hold you back. So, and actually no one knows whether I went to university or not. No. They're going to make a decision on me in the way that I show up and I am in that room and how I'm seen. So that's probably really driven me. I've always been a Tigger. And I talked about Tigger in Canada a year ago. I sort of did to a room full of students that I always thought I was too bouncy for the boardroom. And then I went, I'm in the wrong boardroom. I don't want to be in this boring boardroom. I want to be somewhere that's like dynamic and fun. And Auto Trader was that place. So I think Auto Trader was full of young, brilliant people. And I thought, wow, you know, we're learning from people that are 20 years younger than me. And that's really refreshing that age does not equal, you know, authority when it comes to new subjects. I think EVs are seeing a real kind of breadth of new talent coming in to this space, which is fantastic. So I've always been quite bouncy. And I've always worked on the launch of things. And that's, I have so much energy. So my first job in publishing was to launch Power Magazine, if anyone knows that magazine long enough.
Yes, yes.
And then we launched Revs. And then I became a sales trainer for a couple of years. I was seconded into training rookies, which I loved. And then we launched Evo. So my husband and I, and a few people, Mavericks, launched Evo with literally no budget because EMAP closed performance car. So I was on the launch team of Evo. And we were just like, one of the questions I think was like, what was a great time in your life? And it was that we were like, we're going to have a launch party. Let's flag it. And we tried so much stuff. It was like, I was 26. And I look back and go, oh my God, I was 26. That's insane that we just did that. But it was brilliant. And it succeeded because we just thought, we're going to do it because the industry needs this thing. And it's still going today. So that's, you know, I think that's, launching things is probably what I do best, like go in and just bounce all over stuff.
Sarah, you talk about imposter syndrome a lot, don't you? It's something which is prevalent in the business world generally, that there are people who achieve great things. How do you overcome it?
Yeah, there's a real challenge with imposter syndrome because it can often be misdiagnosed as well as a need. So imposter syndrome can manifest itself as sort of truly believing that you're not good enough and you shouldn't be there and you're not going to be able to fulfill the thing you've been asked to do. But I've often thought that imposter syndrome is too broad a sentence. So for example, sometimes you just have a bad day. I recently sat the Institute of Directors finance director exam, and I swear to you, I had studied and I opened that exam thing on the internet. It's fully invigilated digitally. Someone sat there watching you do it. And it's the first time I've ever thought, surely I just need to cheat because I'm not going to know any of these answers. And of course, I left that exam completely deflated. It wasn't being negative. I wasn't being unrealistic. I literally didn't know the answers. I had to guess almost every single one despite my best efforts. Am I good enough to be a strategy director? Should I quit my job now because I clearly don't understand these things? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And imposter syndrome can make you think it's an extreme reaction. Make you think that you really are not good enough. But all it means is actually it could be a positive if you can highlight the thing, get to the root of where that feeling's coming from. And I agree with you about that too bouncy for the boardroom thing. I'm just learning this about myself now. You know, you're too much. I get that a lot. Too much. And I just think, for who? You? You know,
Is that women and men that say that to you? Or is that just men who feel that you are somehow usurping their masculine territory?
I don't know. It depends. I think there's definitely still a lot of that alive and well. I unfortunately do go through most weeks with something I could point at and say, well, that didn't feel very comfortable. And I'm pretty sure it wouldn't happen to my friends or colleagues who don't look like me or consider themselves to be female. But unfortunately, there's the opposite case too, is that sometimes I see gaggles of females getting together and making my male counterparts feel very intimidated and very unwelcome and very unable to access the discussion that's going on. So I just think we all need to be a little more aware of who we're talking to at the time. And again, with the sort of inverse of imposter syndrome, lift each other up a little bit more rather than sort of trying to say, I really thought that was going to go better, or had one not so long ago where I sort of had a client question I couldn't answer. And I just felt like I should know the answer and I probably should have known the answer, but I simply didn't. So creating an environment where you can't then go and ask without feeling like you're going to look or feel stupid is the beginning of finding out you're in the wrong boardroom, I think. So I'm so pleased to hear that you've overcome this. And Jackie, one of the things at the Woman of the Year Award ceremony was a book, another book fans, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. She's digging for it for people that are listening and watching. And it's a sort of, they call it a snack book or something, because it's a short version of the longer one. And it pulls together so many quotes from people who are philosophers or psychologists or just people who are famous in general who have done rather well in their industry. Mm. And was there anything in there that stood out for you that you just wish people would listen to when you're going through your career?
There's something about failure, how you view failure. And I actually think because I've got one of my boys at the moment is going through a challenging time. He's had a year at uni, he's come back, he's going to take a pause and then try and set up his own, he's a music producer type person. So it's creatively, it's really competitive. I'm like, do you know what? I'd rather you tried 100 times and failed. And I listened to a Michael Bublé podcast and it took him so many attempts. So I think if you reframe failure as, hey, that wasn't meant for me, but I actually really, what did you learn from trying to do it? And I mentioned in my first job, I was in media sales. Now, I was a rookie in advertising sales. And at the time, didn't have emails. You pick up the phone and you would make 40 calls a day. And my God, that teaches you resilience. And you go, what?
Yeah.
Next. You know, so it's just, so I think, what is your, you know, the very first thing is, what are you afraid of? And I think most of us are not afraid of failing. We're afraid of being seen as failing, or of what, and often it's what other people think of us that gets in the way of us doing it.
It's that judgment.
Totally, totally. There's a whole kind of the shame thing. So, you know what? I think the failure thing, or how do you reframe failure as, because we've all had different jobs and sometimes they're right for you and sometimes they're not. But it's often about finding the thing that fires you up and gets you excited. And then if you're failing at that, or you're trying to do something you're really passionate about, it's never a failure. It's a journey. So, you know, just it's a journey, and enjoy the journey. Don't sort of worry too much about when things go wrong, or, you know, just course correct, do something different, speak to your friends, have a support network around you. So I think being afraid or feeling the fear and doing it anyway, what is it that you're actually afraid of? And sort of drill down into that. And then think about the little steps to get you to where you want to be, because you never get there in one leap. You have these all these little steps. So where I was chatting to Seth, my son, about where he wants to get to. And for him, his goal is Glastonbury Newcomer Stage. I went, brilliant, do it, go for it. I'm with you. What do you need? What are the steps? Where's your network? How do you get there? And then just go for it. And do you know what? You might do it in 5 years, 10 years, 1 year. Who knows? But if that's where you're going, you'll never be disappointed if you take the steps towards it.
So you're a strategist, though, Jackie, as am I. So we see things differently. We see all the steps. We see the pathways. We know that that equals that equals that. You can get there. Well, it's difficult, though, because if other people don't feel that way, they constantly feel like they're hitting brick walls and have to find ways around them. That's a challenge for people. So I think part of it, in terms of being, because I know you're a fantastic mentor, there are elements of having to adjust oneself to whoever you're speaking to. And actually, Jackie, I don't know if you know this, but John used to be a very well-known motoring journalist. And I did wonder, because when you were saying about the magazine, of course, I didn't know about it. I'm relatively new to the OEM realm, the last sort of 10 years. So I wondered, John, you've had that career change from motoring, now EV motoring, and you're just one of the most incredible names in our industry. Tell Jackie and I, how did you overcome things like imposter syndrome or readjusting your course and not seeing failure as failure? Have you got there yet? How do you do it?
I don't have failures. I have things that don't go as I expect them to go. So I set very low, a very low bar of expectation in anything I do. I do the very best I can, knowing that I'm not very skilled at very much at all. I expect to fail. I expect to then have to find a solution. And I'm a bodger in life. I make not much go very far. So if I'm building something, doing something practical, I will cock it up. Almost guaranteed. I will get frustrated with myself. I will shout and swear at myself. I will then be thinking all the time about, how do I overcome that problem? I could try that. I could try this. Let's give that a go. And eventually, I'm lucky enough that somebody smiles on me and says, yeah, that one will work. And it works. So I genuinely don't feel that I'm an imposter. I used to. So when I'd get on a stage or in front of a camera and I'd start speaking, I'd feel awful. I'd feel sick because I thought, well, who am I to give an opinion? Who am I to have my voice? And it was only through the kindness of other people saying, you're actually quite good at that. Oh, I like that. That was good, that. And you go, you're just saying that because you want something. And over time, it became 1, 2, 10, 50. And you think, well, they can't all want something. There must be something in what I'm doing. I don't know what it is, and I still don't know what it is. But I'm the only me I can be. So I can't be an imposter. You know Sarah better than anybody. Some days I get it hideously wrong. I'm autistic. I've got ADHD. I don't deal well with being overwhelmed. I get ratty, angry, frustrated at myself. I don't understand things at first blush. I'm massively flawed, but people still seem to want to spend some time with me. So I've obviously chosen the right boardroom.
Yeah, no, you have. You found your niche. And I'm hoping people listening to this, if they don't feel they have, will be inspired, because there isn't ever an end point. I was thinking about your story about your son knowing that he wants to be on the Glastonbury Newcomers stage. A lot of people don't have any goal. Mm. They don't know how to create a goal. They're scared to set a goal because perhaps a goal they had before became a complete curveball, distant memory.
I've got a goal. Yeah. And you two are experts at this. I'd like to really like to understand this.
Go on then. I'm listening.
Both of you talk about books. Now, you're massively busy human beings. Sarah, you stay up till gone midnight riding your bike and doing all your madness. And Jackie, you clearly have a busy, busy, busy life. How on earth do you find time to read?
So, I mean, the way I do it, I'm not a front-to-back book reader. So I tend to do, I mean, this is the book I was telling you about, that's my other kind of go-to. And I think dip in and out is the way I do it. I often think, you know, there's make time for a start, actually. If you think about, I think since lockdown, all of us are more guilty of being at our desks for longer than we ever were before. So I also listen to a lot of podcasts. I have two dogs and I walk the dogs. So I have podcasts. I love podcasts because I don't always have time to sit and read. But I do try, and it might only be 10 minutes. If you were to read something for 10 minutes a day that's fascinating to you, we feel like Blinkist. They kind of crunch everything down, you know, in sort of, you know, bite-sized pieces. But the online learning and the way that we access knowledge is so different now. We've gone from books to, and we talked about this as an analogy for tech. You know, I love reading books. I taught my kids to read books. I'm passionate about the written word and storytelling because we all learn through stories. But actually, that's moved from that to a Kindle, now to a podcast. I think we've just changed how we digest the information, but we still get it in. One of my go-tos is Brené Brown. I just have it on I just kind of go through the chapters that I think, oh my God, I need some of that today. And I'll just have 10 minutes while I'm walking, and it just goes in my brain. So I think it, you know, how it works for you, make it work for you.
So you prioritize that 10 minutes. Do you have it as a schedule? Do you?
No.
Or just when you need it?
Yeah. Okay. It could be it's on my desk and I kind of finish a call, and I journal a lot as well, actually. That's been really helpful for me. Journaling, whatever you're going through, whenever you're going through it, you will see progress in your life. So I do journal. And that was in the back of therapy, actually, post of all. You know, like, I had a brilliant therapist for 2 years and went through a lot of self-forgiveness, because that's a journey in itself. So I journaled an awful lot about that. And then now, I'm in a much happier place in my life. I've got a wonderful partner. Life is really joyful. But it wasn't always. You know, there are times when you're like, it's horrible, but you just have to keep going. So I think find out what works for you. Journaling is something I think is great, because it just gets out of your head before you sleep. Because if you're going through a difficult time, you don't sleep, and that's never great for your mental health. So that sort of helped. But yeah, I think it goes in fits and starts as well. Sometimes I've got time, other times I don't. But I'm not going to be mad at myself. I haven't got time. Your feet take you where you need to be, you know?
Like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
There's a very interesting concept that I've long talked about with, I call it the triple eight. So you've got 8 hours you're supposed to be sleeping for, 8 hours-ish that you're supposed to be working for. And that leaves you with 8 other hours, which is incredibly hard to calculate, really. How long do you take preparing food, eating food, showering, washing, doing those things that you have to do as a human? And I really, truly believe that it boils down to approximately 2. So I think there are 2 hours in every day that you can choose to spend watching a movie or reading a book or doing a podcast or doing research. And actually, I've just moved house and I'm not a bookworm at all. I love a science textbook. I love a policy document or something, but I hate stories. stories drive me completely around the bend. I can't be bothered to read them. And I often find myself going back to the other page because I haven't read every single word, or I've skipped. Oh, so annoying. So I got to go back again. So I don't think I've ever completed a book or bar for an exam at English Literature, of which I got A star. It's not like I can't do it. I just don't like doing it. And the other thing I've noticed is because today's world is so pressured with layers of things that are happening all at the same time, people have started to listen to podcasts and consume their information whilst doing something else. And that's fine, but I'm worried for us. I'm worried that that means we're not in the moment doing the other thing. I'm worried it means we're walking our, you've said you've got a dog. I walk all the time. And I've stopped listening to music even, because I realized I was going out to listen to my music rather than going out to listen to the birds or talk to neighbors or anybody that might see me without headphones on would say hi, right? And since I've done that, the calm levels have gone down. I'm no less pressurized in my life, but I am consuming less and doing less. And it just feels better that way, to have more simplicity rather than where's my headphones, where's my, you know, get it all done. Mm-hmm. What I do love though is in-car learning. So fleet managers will be horrified to hear this, that when I'm doing a long journey, I enjoy consuming information during that journey. So I always have a whole stream of podcasts lined up. Other podcasts are available. Of course, the Evie Cafe is my favourite. But we do the conversational podcast much more fluidly than anybody else, I think, personally. So I do so enjoy that. It doesn't feel stressful to consume that. And what about you, John? Because you're learning something new all the time. Every time we catch up, we live miles apart, by the way, about 400 miles, John and I live apart.
What?
And whenever we chat, he's always doing something. I've just fitted a kitchen, or I've just decided to change a bathroom. Like, what the hell? How many instruction manuals have you had to do? So tell us about your learning ability and capability, John.
It is affected by my neurodivergence, so reading has become something I haven't got the patience for. So YouTube is the best thing in the world, and just learning from others' experience. We've had a lot of tradesmen here doing lots of building and civil engineering and all that sort of stuff, and so I ask them and I say, I bought two things this last week, two dollies. Now I didn't know what a dolly was. I knew it as a sack truck for moving things. So now I'm 59 years old. I've learned that I'm not as strong as I used to be. And so when my wife says to me, can you move that flower pot from there to there? I used to just be able to pick it up and move it. I mean, we're talking reasonable size. And I was nearly killed by an olive tree. It's a ton and a half of olive tree, 100 years old. And I thought I could move it on my own. And it fell over and pinned me to the ground. And that was the point at which I went, do you know what? I'm a liability. So I bought the right equipment to do the job by watching other people delivering stuff and thinking, a dolly or a sack truck is useful for moving heavy items. I can't do that anymore. So I'm a very practical person. You either have to show me through YouTube or instructional videos, or I'll kind of figure it out. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. But reading is a joy that I have lost. When I did my law degree, there was a lecturer who said to me, you will lose two things. You will lose people around you who don't develop at the same rate as you, and you will become frustrated by them. And that was true. And you will lose the love of reading, because all you do is read. And it's a bit like you said, Sarah, a bit like reading the policy documents, the strategies. You enjoy that. There was a time when I enjoyed reading legal text. Now, I can't read a shopping list, frankly.
Amazing how we evolve. And there's an element, as we were talking about podcasts, that I do so enjoy some of them are a bit long, but Diary of a CEO has got some incredible guests. And the one I absolutely loved, I don't know if you caught this one then, Jackie, if you like it too, the neuroscientist who was explaining about how they've devoted what's now 20 years to looking at female specific brains, because it's usually male specific brains that contribute to these studies. And they've discovered something that, like, menopause isn't necessarily something that's contributed directly to just the ovaries alone. It is indeed something that happens within the female brain as well. So that once we understand how humans, so both original genders at this stage, both evolve over time, can help us to adapt and learn differently. So your sack truck or dolly truck, as you called it, that's an evolution of your human state. Mm. You now can't lift that. That's not a failing. That's just your state. You know, my ability to pass apparently Institute of Director exams. Yeah, that's looking a little tougher now. So I've got to make allowances for that rather than beating myself up about it. So yeah, understanding where you are on your sort of human journey, I think, is one of the secrets to happiness.
Can we pick up on that? Because menopause, Jackie, I'm fascinated by this genuinely, because my wife went through a hideous time with menopause and you know, 8 years of sheer hell, where she didn't know what she was going to be like on any given hour, never mind any given day. There is very little research and time spent in understanding one of the biggest causes of poor mental health on our planet. And I don't understand why we don't, as a society, value the well-being of 49%, 50% of the world.
Yeah.
Could you wrap your head around that? Because it just baffles me.
I think so. One of the things that, though, I actually had my ovaries taken out at 49, because my mum had ovarian cancer and didn't, and she died at 49. So I lost my mum very early.
Wow.
So that has meant that I'd been very ovary aware for a very long time. So for a number of years, we had, and that's a great leveler as well. I was 23 when I lost her. But it's, so having awareness of ovarian cancer is a really, and again, it's another thing. We talk about breast cancer a lot. It's easy to test, you know, you can check for lumps and you can have mammograms, whatever. But ovaries are really inside your body. You just don't know. So often, and I sometimes will post about, how do you know, or when do you get checked? Because often you discount things like bloating or, you know, discomfort. If you pee, I actually, so when I was 20, just after I lost my mum, I went for a routine exam and they found a 10 centimeter cyst on one ovary. I couldn't feel it. Wow. And it luckily was benign, but I had that removed. But then my mum actually jokingly said to me, look, when you've had your kids, get your ovaries out. And so she knew more than this surgeon. So it was always an option that I could then do it. So I was going through perimenopause probably for 2 or 3 years. And the biggest thing for me was I had never had anxiety. You can see that I'm quite outwardly a confident person. And I am, you know, quite, you know, I'm okay in my skin. But I had this awful anxiety and brain fog. And I now say to people, look, I'm really sorry. I've been through the menopause and my brain clears the cache of names. I just don't remember names. I kind of go, whoop, it just wiped them out. So I'm really honest about it. And I've got a new boss now. And he said, yeah, I can never remember names. And I'm like, thank God. But I've been really honest about, I can't control this thing. Actually, I've always been the one that knew the kids at the school gate, the parents' names, the name of their dog. And, you know, John, my husband, was like, gee, how do you do that? I want to know. I just have a thing. But that was... And everyone goes through it differently. So I think Davina has done some great stuff by talking about it a lot more, really raised the awareness of how our bodies change. I've put weight on, I didn't know why. And I'm not eating any differently, but I'm now going through a clean for 14 thing. So I'm trying to be healthier. But yeah, you're right. I just think we don't talk about it enough. And I heard a woman somewhere on a podcast, I can't remember who it was or what she said, but it was...
You did.
I know what she said. I can't remember who said it. But one of the things that she mentioned was having children is a choice. That's a choice we all have, right? We can have or not have children. Menstruation and menopause are not choices for girls. We don't choose to menstruate because that happens to your body. You don't choose the menopause because it happens to your body. But you go through it, and 51% of the population will go through that. So we have to make everybody who lives with the women aware of what we're going through in our bodies, you know, and in the workplace as well. So it's the biggest reason women leave jobs at that age.
And relationships. So this incredible scientist went on to describe how there's a huge sort of swathe of people hitting their mid-50s now who are happier than they've ever been. And happiness is a strange definition, right? So what they're reporting is a lower level of giving a monkeys about stuff. And that's a chemical reaction too. So that's as a positive result of having gone through menopause. You can find yourself in a much more sort of laissez-faire, happy to have a normal life, you know, if things don't annoy you as much as they did before. But that middle section can be the highest rate of suicide amongst women between sort of 40 and 50. And I myself, I am metabolically prematurely aged by 10 years. So I'm 49 right now. And I got a wonderful letter from the NHS just last week saying, we'd like to remind you that you're high risk of all of these things. And so I have incredible empathy for people who are in their sort of late 40s and entering into 50s, because the symptoms are the same, even though I'm 40 next year. So it's a really exciting time to know that we are talking about things. And credit, actually, to, I will say, to Pastry, one of our sort of HR ladies there, Sue Brown, has implemented a menopause policy. Mm. So if people are experiencing brain fog, just say, don't sit there panicking and winding yourself up because you can't remember something. Go to your GP, have a test to see what your levels are like, and perhaps, you know, get the time off to do that and see how your employer can support you. There is a legal movement about
absolutely
people being supported. Yeah. And there are many, many, many loving, caring husbands who just don't know who this new person is. Yeah. And hopefully together you can learn who that person is again, because it is a change. And other people sail through it. They have no idea what happened. They just come out the other side and they're absolutely fine. And so, like everything in inclusivity and diversity, we have to be sure to just not tar everyone with the same brush all the time. Everyone's experiences will be completely different. And credit to people like you, John, who kind of get that, and you, Jackie, that talk about it. And yeah, increasingly so, I've decided to as well. Brain fog is absolutely nuts. It's like, John, have you ever hit your head?
Often. Nothing to protect it.
Because you're so tall. Yeah. I just recently had this incident, as you know, and that resulted in the closest thing to brain fog I can ever. I'm trying to type, I'm trying to talk, I can't get sentences out, can't remember anybody's names. And only just coming out of the woods now, like 3 or 4 weeks later, I'm starting to feel myself come back. But it's terrifying when you lose something that you used to be able to do. But if you can positively flip that and say, well, that's not what I'm good at anymore, like you said right at the start of this podcast, Jackie, it's about knowing what you're good at and knowing what you're not good at, and finding a way to get through that. You know, perhaps it's never turning up to an event on your own. Perhaps you've always got a sidekick that's like, what's her name again? Just finding little ways forward. It's fascinating. Absolutely wonderful. Actually, we met at Automotive Awards, I think, the AM Awards 2021, I'm going to say. Jackie, you and I were in the same wonderful ballroom.
Yeah.
And I was on Team Karcher's table. So that was a wonderful evening. And we said, John, Jackie Buck is such a powerhouse. When she enters the room, there's just this wonderful hum of energy of her greeting people and people greeting her, and this incredible swell of positivity. You know, it's great to see you. What have you been up to? And as you say, you always remember some kind of detail about someone. And I'm convinced that's because you've got that wonderful, nurturing sort of mother element to you. And I had forgotten that you'd lost your own mother at 29. And of course, that is a huge leveler. And I wonder as well, because that's absence of grandmother for your boys as well, if you've ended up with multiple roles, where do you think that wonderful nurturing capability you have stems from?
Do you know what? My mum was, so we grew up, she was incredibly proud. But one of the things that she always said to me was, she was my biggest cheerleader, actually. And I think she honestly was. She was funny, because I said, so one of the other things that I do, you asked a question, John, earlier on, like, what else do I do? Well, I've always been a singer. I've sung my whole life. And I sing in a jazz band. I don't know if you know that, Sarah. Okay, so I sing in a jazz quartet, which I love. So again, it's an element of my life that gives me real joy. I don't do it for any, you know, we do it for coins. We don't get paid a lot of money for it, but it's a real thing. I've always done it. So performance is something that you have like a stage presence. So I go on, I used to sing in a cover band for years. And then when I had my kids, I didn't sing for a while. And I actually lost my voice. I had sinus surgery and I couldn't sing. And I thought I'd lost an arm. Mm. So, I prayed. I was like, please, I need my voice. I couldn't. So I got back involved with this jazz band and I had to retrain my voice to be able to sing. So I did vocal warm-ups. I went on YouTube. John, I found this brilliant like vocal coach thing. So, and then all my boys were choristers. So I thought they've all got this amazing thing. So my mum would just say, oh, you're brilliant at that. Or she would watch someone on the telly singing, you could do that. You could do it. So she had this constant, and she had no confidence herself, bless her. She was really shy, like painfully shy. So I think I learned from her in, if you believe in someone and you drip that belief in their ear constantly, then you've kind of got that, well, you can do that kind of mentality. Mm. So I'm saying to, and actually Evan, my oldest son works in motorsport. He didn't know what he wanted to do. And I said to him, if money was no object and there was no judgment, what would you do? And he was like, I just want to learn everything about cars. I went, do that then. So actually, bless him, he's done, came out the lockdown, there were no apprenticeship places for him. So he's done a bit of a DIY, found some work experience with a racing team. He's done his degree through the Open University. He's three modules away from graduating. And he's like 2 years behind his other cohort. But he's really loved, started out literally sourcing out nuts and bolts. And now he's like doing the analytics for race cars and like doing what. So I think having the, I believe in you, go do your best thing. All of the boys have got, they're following their dream path, which is like, if you love that thing, go do that thing. Don't do a job that you don't love, because life is really short. You just don't know how long you've got. So I think that's, you know, that's the one thing I think my mum, that's her legacy, is just be the cheerleader for those people that you love and care about, and give them that, you know, go do the thing and be the support for them. I think that's probably where it comes from, was having it from her. And even though she went too soon, there are no regrets. I had the most incredible woman as a lead, you know, as my role model. And she was super kind as well to loads of my friends. One of my friends got pregnant at school. Her parents, like, just, my mum was there for her. So all these people came to her funeral, that my mum was like the wise woman that they would all ring up when they were having a nightmare. Like, they'd ring me and go, is your mum there? Like, yeah, mum. There you go.
Oh, that's amazing.
She was one of those people. She was,
says a lot. Says a lot about you, Jackie.
I've got a final question, if I may, Jackie, which is, you pack an awful lot in to every day, clearly. Is there something that you have in your mind that you want to try and achieve, which is completely different, that will take time to do, and that you'll need to almost extract yourself from your busy life to be able to do? Do you have a burning desire to be or do something that you currently haven't done?
Oh, big question. And this, I mean, so on the back of the Barbara Cox thing, what I wanted to do, and I haven't done it, and I've been talking about it for a long time, and I just need to kick up the, I need to kick myself up the arse to do it. Like, you're, you know, kind of, oh, I'm, you want to listen to me, kind of question. I have that going, like, that little tape in my head. But one of the things that I've always observed in meetings, and Sarah, I bet you also, and Bradley John, you may see this as well, when you go into meeting rooms, there are so many amazing women that are, that don't have a profile, that are doing so many incredible jobs. Well, I would love to do something that brings some of that out. So I do want to do like a podcast that kind of is about women, inspiring women, but also that allows any student or female, or identifies as female or whatever, male, female, I don't care, but actually that wants to get involved with the industry, that can see the diversity and breadth of jobs that are being done by, obviously for me, particularly women, but how can we get more women excited about automotive? It's not just, you know, nuts, bolts and oil. There's some really cool jobs in this industry that we could start to, you know, uncover and shine the light on. So that's something I would really love to do internationally, because I'm fortunate that I work with amazing women all over the world. So I get to go and travel and do events and things with Keyloop. So that's a real opportunity. And it's, we work across the industry. So retail, OEM, finance. You know, there's some really cool stuff that's emerging. I think
behind the showroom door could be your working title.
Oh, that's why you do Sarah Snowman. Yeah, something like that. I mean, I joke with you, we should do this, and you're like, yeah, we should definitely do it. But I would love to do something like that. But
Count me in, count us in. You know, this podcast wouldn't be what it is without John and Paul, and particularly sort of those two, and then me and here and there. And so, yeah, if we can help you in any which way, we'd love to.
Absolutely.
Of course.
We said right at the top of the show that I'd never met you. And it's always a joy to meet new people. And I love people greatly. But you are very special.
Very, very special. Very special. You wait till you do meet her, John. You're going to be like, wow, my God.
Yeah. You are very, very special. You are one of a handful of people that I have had the joy of speaking to for the first time and consciously thought, yeah, you're not going anywhere. You're coming with me.
People. Do you know what? And Sarah and I, sort of, we hung out at an evening event, and I was like, people, we're just coming back to each other, like, let's hang out. But yeah, it was really good. That's so kind of you to say. Thank you so, so much. It's really good.
Thank you for being part of it.
Absolutely. Sarah, thank you for being here and as a previous Woman of the Year, you're binned, because there, there's a new star in the sky, and that's Jackie Barker. Jackie, thank you so, so much for today. And thanks for listening to the Evie Cafe Takeaway, a podcast that really is just a joy. It's sunshine in your ears, and we love doing it. Thank you for joining us. If you want to find more Evie Cafe Takeaway podcasts, go to Spotify, go to Google, go to Apple, search Evie Cafe Takeaway, and there's a load of people that we've been chatting to. About 74, 75 episodes now. Industry experts and inspiring human beings who just make the world a better place. We'll see you soon. Thank you kindly and have a good day. Bye.